When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This week on Brum Eats World.
With Feeny, and I was like, we don't get a lot of Jack and Feeny. I feel like anytime a student gets a chance to get a lesson from Feeny, it feels honored. You're like, oh, this is my Feeny episode?
It uses Feeny better than he's been used since I can remember. I feel like Feeny's just kind of been like, they don't know what to do with him.
I agree.
In this episode, it's like they brought him back to what he does best, which is teaching lessons in non-direct ways.
When the spawn meets world.
What up, bros?
What up, bros?
And welcome to Brum Eats World.
When the spawn meets world.
Your boy meets world fungus. I'm Siege.
And I am Tony Curtis. How are you,
sir? How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm excited. I'm excited to talk to you about this episode.
Are you?
I'm feeling good. Like, I don't know. We've been getting a lot of crap lately. And to me, I felt like there was this episode kind of did something for me. We're going to get into it. I'm excited to talk to you.
I completely agree with you in that point in time where this episode felt different from how it usually feels. But I do want to say, before we get into the episode, I just want to kind of check in on you. It's been a while since we've recorded. I know that we just released an episode.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But it's been a while since we recorded. How has the new year been treating you so far?
You know, I'm feeling good. The world is weird, and I'm kind of embracing it.
Absolutely. The 2024 feels like the wild card year. It is a leap year. And to that point, I didn't want to make this our homework, but I did want to bring up the Cat Williams of it all.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that.
Me
and you could talk about that motherfucker's interview for the whole episode, and
not going to, I promise. But I just wanted to bring up that I will say this, because I wrote it on my threads, and I will say it again. A lot of people responded to Cat Williams, but not one person threatened to sue. And in an industry and in a country that is as litigious as the United States of America and Hollywood, if you ain't threatened to sue, then you know he was talking some truth.
I have been deep in the sauce of this all week, and let me just tell you, it's amazing. Everything he said in the interview is backed up with receipts. I remember going to see Kings of Comedy. I've been following all of these people their entire careers.
Yeah.
And to just see, like, to hear what's been going on behind the scenes, the beef between Steve Harvey and Bernie Mac, like, I'm getting into it all. And it's so, the tea is so good this time. That's what I mean. Like, 2024 has been serving tea, if nothing else.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, you're right. That's a very good point. If nothing else, 24 said, we here to reveal the truth. Say the sayings. So yeah, I'm excited about it. Okay. Again, you guys, thank you for having a little break. I wanted to get us in the mood, but nonetheless, as always, you guys, make sure that you are, if you are listening to us on YouTube, that you hit subscribe, that if you are listening to us on your phone, that you hit follow. We always appreciate a rating. We always appreciate hearing from you guys. At brummeetsworld@gmail.com or at brummeetsworld on all the places, including threads, as I had said. And I don't want to take up that much more of your time. I think that we should just get into the tell me about it.
705, you light up my union. Tell us about it. Girls' night gets overrun when Corey and Sean come and overstep. Rachel is forced to put the boys in check. Tell us about it. Jack and Eric get new jobs, but Eric gets into monkey trouble, so Jack is forced to then bust his bubble.
You know I love when we get two lyrics, and I think you did great. Because at first I was like, He was the whole song without even discussing the beat plot. But nope, you brought it back around. You're feeling yourself. I like it. I like it for you.
Well, let me just say this. It was very hard to combine them into one just because the two storylines are so drastically different and weird.
Very.
Can I just say, what the hell is the meaning of this title? You Light Up My Union. Other than the boys working at the student union, I really just could not find the connection between the A plot and the B plot in the name of this episode.
I think it's a play on the song You Light Up My Life. But I agree with you that that doesn't necessarily mean anything. So we'll have to come back to that. But this is season 7, episode 5. You Light Up My Union. Rachel gets mad when Corey and Sean read her diary while Jack and Eric take over as managers for the student union. I kept it simple.
Honestly, it's best to keep it simple. And let me just say, after a season of what seemed to be very chaotic episodes, this episode felt structurally like sound to me. I don't know how to say that, but like it just felt like there was thought into these characters. I'm so glad that we're getting the girls and their roommate dynamics explored. Right. I'm glad that we're getting a good use of Jack Hunter. And getting into Jack and Eric in terms of like, okay, they're in school. They're about to graduate. They're prepping for the real world. Like these are things that conversations that should be had in your last year of college. So I'm really glad that we just got into these stories that felt very timely, but also that they were kind of simplistic in their nature. So I felt like your simplistic review was good.
I just want to say to your point that this was written by Allison M. Gibson and directed by Kevin Tracy. Just these are names that we don't always hear. I'm not going to say that they haven't done anything, but just want to give them credit because you're right. This felt tonally different from the last few episodes we had seen. In some way, they feel like two different shows and they feel like two different missions. But I'm looking forward to getting into both of these because I will say this. Earlier, I had said Corey and Sean were the A plot, but I'm going to make because of the way that the lesson is, the way that this story is kind of structured, I'm going to call Jack and Eric the A storyline.
Really? I think it is. I think it's the most complete storyline of the bunch. Yeah.
Exactly. And so because of that, I will say that worked kind of the best for me, the A storyline. And we still have some zaniness. We still have some what are we doing? We still have some. We're definitely in season 7 of it all.
Thank you so much for saying that because when we got to the Jack and Eric storyline, it felt like such a great season 7 episode. The monkey appearance makes it so clear that we're in like season 7 cartoon, like throw it on the wall. Who cares? Like
whatever.
It's the last season. But exploring like that dynamic between Jack and Eric, what makes Jack is special and important and what makes Eric special and important and what can they learn from each other? Yes. These feel like classic Boy Meets World lessons where I feel like if you got rid of the zaniness of the monkey aspect of it or how like kind of overly dumb Eric is, you could easily place the storyline in season 5 or season 6 and it would fit perfectly.
I agree with you. I think that if we eliminate the monkey entirely and we come up with some other MacGuffin that we need, we would in fact have a really solid story arc with these two characters. I loved like when we started the episode off, we got to see Jack with Feeny and I was like, we don't get a lot of Jack and Feeny. And I like this idea that Feeny has been watching Jack as well and knows his strengths and knows what lesson Jack needs to learn. And it's just like, it makes Feeny like this all-seeing eye, but it also, I feel like anytime a student gets a chance to get a lesson from Feeny, it feels honored. You're like, oh, this is my Feeny episode. This is my Feeny lesson episode. You know what I'm saying?
And also, I think it uses Feeny better than he's been used since I can remember. Like, since like, the whole Be True episode where like he like destroyed all of that Curtis's shit or whatever. Yeah. Like ever since then, I feel like Feeny's just kind of been like, they don't know what to do with him. But in this episode, it's like they brought him back to what he does best, which is teaching lessons in non-direct ways.
Absolutely.
And I love that they found a way to incorporate his style of teaching into a collegiate setting. Of this, like, Jack being like, I'm so focused on what's next. But Feeny being like, I know what's next and I'm going to prepare you for it. It's like something I appreciated because I don't feel like we've gotten that in a while.
Absolutely. So I personally was really happy with the development of Jack and Eric in this episode. I'm not gonna lie, I liked the performance of almost everyone. We know where my exceptions are, but like I liked the performance of almost everyone. I especially liked Eric this episode because I felt his dumb was more naivete than it was Jim Carrey at his max.
Oh, I disagree with you entirely. But
really?
Yeah. I think that as much as I love this storyline and as much as I, of course, love Will Friedle's performances, he's so like great at certain portions of this episode. The level of dumb that they're making Eric, where I don't know if it's safe for Eric to be unsupervised. And that's like where we're getting like to the cartoony aspect where I'm really struggling. Like if it was anything other than a monkey, like give me any other reason, give me any something during that performance to make me believe that Eric understands that he's giving away money that he's going to be accountable for, or that Jack will get in trouble for. Just a moment of just being like, I don't know if I really should do this, instead of being so blind that there's an Eric monkey who needs a girlfriend. Like, it seems like the most outrageous storyline to the point where I wish they would have made it more of a Pinocchio thing where it's like, hey, when you go out in the real world, people are gonna try to scam you. And yeah. I wish it wasn't a scam that was so easy to see through. That I feel like would have made the lesson more perfect.
But
for
the
children.
Thing is, at the end, it isn't a scam. So that's the problem with your whole idea, is that at the end it turns out to not be a scam. Even
but wouldn't
though
it have
it's
added
set up
weight?
Like a scam. Oh,
yeah,
no, I completely get that.
Yeah.
And to my, I'm gonna push back and say that. Your problem is with the monkey aspect of it, not Eric's performance. And I say this because in the first, when we first see Eric and Jack in the student union and they're working the student union and it makes sense, Jack is talking about how well he's doing and how prepared he is and how excited he is. And then he looks over and he says that he's worried about Eric. And what we see Eric do from that point is Eric has people skills. This is what I keep coming back to. Eric is not like, it's not that he's a unattended child. It's that he sees the joy and happiness. And as Feeny later says, has the heart that is needed. And so he's going up to these, he's going up to one girl and he's like, you know what you need? You're studying really hard. You're too focused. Here's some whipped cream, you know, like adds a little brightness to your day. You two, you've been making eyes at each other all this time. Come, sit at the table. Say hi to her. He's a good-looking guy. You know, start a conversation. Here's some whipped cream for it. And it's like, is it zany? Is it weird? Yes, but his weirdness in this moment makes sense.
I don't even think it's weird and zany. I actually think it's a perfect use of Eric. We're seeing Eric display amazing customer service skills in the way Jack can. We're seeing a direct contrast in their skill sets in the way where both of them can be equally successful in two different positions. And I wish that would have been the extent of it. I wish they didn't push it to be so zany because I feel like that was enough to set up the conflict.
Well, here's the thing that I will say. First of all, I agree with you in the sense that Jack, it's just whimsical enough for Jack to think that he's, you know, he's like, oh, I'm worried about him. It's just enough. But Jack is also just together enough for you to understand why Eric feels like, oh, I went too far this time. I need to dial it back.
Yeah.
Go from 90 to zero, you know? So that was my whole thing with it. But I will say, I think you keep coming back to the zaniest thing that happens. If we think about it, the zaniest thing that actually happens that Eric actually participates in is the monkey of it all. And to that, when Eric gives the monkey to the organ grinder, I said the money to the organ grinder, and the organ grinder, who is, if we're going to do our roll call, is played by Jack Axelrod, is his name. Cool. When he gives the money to the organ grinder and he says, little Eric, do your happy dance. And he does it. And then Eric goes, I have the same happy dance. I was like, yes, this worked on me. It was just silly enough. It's not like he tried to be a monkey. It's not like he, you know, it's like he didn't go to the max of putting on a monkey costume or trying to be the monkey's girlfriend or any of this other really ridiculous stuff I don't put past them. He just literally bonded with a monkey and someone who needed money. And I am with you in the idea that both Eric and Jack give money away that I'm like, it's not yours. This is the student.
Well, this is the issue is that when Jack gives his money away, and I don't want to skip ahead, but it happens in a way where you can sympathize with Jack in that moment. And I wish that something would have happened to make us sympathize with Eric in that moment to think like, oh, even in your own Eric way, and maybe this was the best I could come up with, but I just struggled because when Jack later chastises Eric about it, I'm kind of on Jack's side. I'm like,
oh, 100%.
You are not, I don't know that you can be unsupervised in the world. Like, there are things that Eric says and does that makes me wonder if he is a normally functioning adult. And, like, that's the part where I'm, like, start to side with Eric, Jack in a way where I don't know that it helps the storyline that I'm, like, for Jack in this,
okay,
in this way.
So I'm going to push and say that I feel like Eric in this episode is the most ADHD that he could be without being...
Or spectrum, whatever.
Or spectrum or whatever. Because specifically, there's a moment where Jack goes, what are you going to do with this money? He goes, go to the bank, deposit it, come back. And he's like, that's all. Repeat it. Go to the bank. Go to the deposit. Come back. You see him walk into the bank being like, mom's lunch, pineapple. You know, like the random things that you understand that all his mind said was repeat these three words. But through the game of telephone that is his brain, yeah, it's changed. And even though he got there, he's like, wait, what am I doing here again? Oh, I'm at a bank. That's what this is for. So to me, I was like, oh, Eric's actually not being, like, I can't think of anything that Eric does that is too zany or too crazy that he does in this episode that he hasn't done crazier things in the episode previously or
true.
In upcoming episodes.
It's season 7, episode. So it is what it is. I will say this. There is something about the way that Jack feels protective over Eric,
yeah,
that I really enjoyed. And I'm like, there's something between these two.
Our,
like,
Derek moment.
Let's talk about
it. I love
it. Like,
Derek.
It feels very brotherly. It feels very... like, you can understand why Jack is concerned for Eric in a way where, you know, I feel like every character on the show has expressed concern for Eric's future in some way, shape, or form. So it makes sense that Jack is that person. And that's his best friend. He feels the responsibility to try to help him, even if he does it in his own Jack way.
Well, what he says, which I think is really interesting, when Eric comes back without the money, he goes, I don't have the deposit slip. I gave it to... It does feel very Jack and the Beanstalk.
Yeah.
Oh, this dude gave me magic beans. And you're like, what? You know, like it does feel very much that. And which, by the way, would have made a way better title, like Jack and the Bank Teller or something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, but anyway, all this is to say that Eric comes back and he's more optimistic and naive. And he's like, I gave him my word. Why wouldn't he come back? And the only thing that I have with this particular lesson, as you were saying, is we then validate Eric's decision, his foolish decision to give a bunch of money to a man who we do not have any reason to believe. Like, everything is set up that this is a scam. We see the guy look at his name tag and say, oh, his name is Eric. Oh, this dude has a bunch of money. Yeah. My monkey's called Little Eric, you know? And
I need the exact amount of money you have.
Oh my God. It happens to be the exact amount. Like,
and
so
he's
that,
rewarded for his naivete in a way that is dangerous for kids.
Exactly. And that idea of he gave his word being something that we see come back. And it's like, oh, you should trust people who give you their word. And I'm like, no. You're right in the sense that just because someone gave you their word does not mean that you should trust them. But also, you shouldn't be so cold-hearted as to not see people and help people in need. So
can we have a real conversation? Jack should not have sent Eric.
Thank you.
As a manager, this is your job. Eric is a people person. Need him to attend the register while you go do manager shit. Like, really, this comes back to Jack, which is why I think Eric wasn't fired for that shit.
Yeah.
Because you use, like, union money to give away. That's not your money.
Nope. And all right, so two things. Like, we going deep dive in here. First of all, everybody knows that deposit bag is locked. You can't open that thing without a key. You zip it up, you lock it, and then the bank unlocks it to get whatever's out there. So the fact that he could even go in there, that's all on Jack. And as you said, I was like, why did Jack even have it? Why, if you did not think you could trust Eric, why would you let him have the money of it all? Like, you're going to let him have the student union. Would you come back and Eric's throwing a talent show for monkeys? That's a very big possibility. But you will have all the money. You will most likely have all the merch. And you just got to explain why there's monkey feces on the floor. That's it. And that's a lot more forgivable to a school, to a boss, to everybody than we lost all of our profits from yesterday.
Can you imagine your manager coming to, like, you're a store owner and the manager comes to you and says, hey, we lost the profits from today because an employee gave it away to a monkey. It's like, this Eric shouldn't be working there anymore. And the only way it happens is if Jack took the fall.
Absolutely. Well, Jack doesn't take the fall because we later see Jack repeat the exact same thing. And then he goes, I'll just work overtime. And I was like, that's not how money works.
Yeah.
Like, the cash register, if it said you sold $10, you can't work and sell $10 more and be like, that replaces the $10. No, the cash register now says you owe $20.
Yeah. And like, at least Jack had the idea of, like, I'm going to take personal accountability for this money. I don't feel like that ever registered to Eric. What I would have preferred is if Jack's boss showed up and Eric saw Jack get chewed out for it. And that's what inspired Eric to change versus, you know, this kind of very cartoonish, I gave the money to a monkey and, like, you know. But one thing I have to say, one thing I like that Jack says is that, like, hey, after this year, no one's going to be around to clean these messes for you. The world is going to crush you. And at this point, as an audience, the world is going to crush Eric. So, like, I have no reason to believe otherwise at this point.
Absolutely. And to your point, I like what he says after that. We were talking about Jarek and our Jarek connection. Mm. And I like that he says, I won't let you bring me down with you. And that goes to show, he's like, look, I've been riding with you for the longest, but next year we can't be doing this kind of stuff. I can't let you drag me down with your hijinks and your, like, I without making it any more than what it's supposed to be, I love you, I care about you, but I can't let you and your foolishness hold me back. And that's very realistic, and that's very, Jack is right to feel that way. And I do like that the lesson that he ends up learning is that Eric also has merit and that they together make for good business.
Oh, I don't think Eric makes for good business at all, actually. But
customer service, as you said. Like,
customer service,
if we look around, Jack, I think it's Jack, says that, now that he is... more hard and he is more about business and he's not thinking about customer service as much. Jack is like, this is better for a business. And Feeney's like, is it? And then you look at the student union and nobody is happy. Everyone's upset. Everyone's just kind of like off. And the vibe that was once welcoming, the vibe that makes people come into the student union. There was a point in time where Feeney is considering buying something simply because of the way that Eric is talking it up.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's like, good for business.
But Jack is not responsible for Eric changing his entire personality because Eric lost school money. Like, Jack should be able to express, like, hey, you put me in a position where I could get in trouble and I can't stand for that. And Eric should be able to internalize that and adjust his behavior in a way that doesn't make everyone miserable. I don't feel like Jack should take any responsibility for the way that Eric is treating the people of the student union now that he's been reprimanded for his behavior.
Well, here's the thing is, the problem, at least on the episode, and this is specifically the way the episode argues it, is that it's not that he lost the money, because Again, in the end, he doesn't lose the money. The money comes back. And Eric has faith that the money will come back. So it is not the money that Eric is responding to. He's responding to Jack saying, no one will be here to clean up your messes anymore. You need to start taking life seriously. That's what Eric is responding to. That's what that change of behavior is coming from. And it is directly from Jack yelling at Eric. Again,
I just feel like Feeny could have had a moment to talk to Eric. Yes. And the way to let him know that there can be balance. Like, yes. That's the one thing is that it's Feeny almost makes it seem like, Jack, as long as you stick with Eric and Eric, as long as you stick with Jack, you two will be two parts of one brain and you'll be able to be successful. But I'm like, that's not really very helpful to these people who may go their separate ways. Like, we need to teach them to be balanced individuals. And I wish that the conversation would have been, hey, Eric, you can be serious without changing your whole personality. And Jack, you can have heart while still being responsible. And it just feels like it was like, hey, you can be one and have the other with you versus being both. It's the lesson I interpreted.
That's what you got from it. But
that's what I got from it.
Specifically says, because if you remember, there's a whole dialogue about Jack saying he can learn a lot from me. The argument, as Feeny is saying, is not that you guys need each other, but you guys can learn from each other.
And that's I do feel like Feeny does push that. I just don't know that Jack ever understood that completely. So
it's Jack's. I want to clarify. I don't disagree with you that it could be a better lesson. I just want to say that it's Jack who goes to Feeny and says, I get that you are trying to teach me that I could learn from Eric.
Sure. And you know what? I am picking at hairs because we're in season 7. And this was actually, again, a storyline I enjoyed. I love it when Jack has that Ebenezer Scrooge moment at the bank where he has that realization that, hey, I don't want to be a heartless capitalist. Yeah. And I am going to help out a person in need just from the goodness of my heart. With money, that's not his. Yeah. But still, it just feels like, you know, there was a lesson that felt important to teach Jack the character, which I appreciated.
Absolutely. And I do like that Jack goes, you don't want to be like me. You know, like he is having this conversation in his head. And so he's talking to the banker and, you know, he stumbled across this thing and he's just like, you don't want to be like me. And they're all like, wait, what? Because they would be shocked. It's like, what? Yeah. What are you talking about? Really quickly, to kind of wrap up our roll call, in that scene, we meet Lou Felder, who plays the bank manager, Bill Stevenson, who plays the bank teller or loan officer, and Jennifer Griffin, who is the woman in need. And again, she's like, I'll pay you right back. And it's like, lady.
Well, can I just say something about that specific scene? It's like, yes, you know, you don't want Jack to be like a heartless capitalist. But what's really funny is that when he gives money, when Jack gives money to the woman in need, the bank manager seems visibly upset that he will now be able to collect the payment. And that made no sense to me.
Well, it actually does when you know anything about the American financial system, which does not want you to pay your bills. It wants you to be in debt. That is exactly, that's it.
We are getting into it. Wow, 99, they already saw the downfall of capitalism. I mean, here we are. Here we are. Guys.
Because again, they're like, ooh, you trying to pay a bill? No.
We don't want that. Yeah,
we don't want that.
You're right.
We want you in debt and we want you making payments for the rest of your life. Anyway, going back to it. This also leads to what will be, I'm going to call it now, it is my Feeny lesson.
Sure.
Which is Feeny saying, it's not enough to succeed in this world because then you're a part of it. Yeah. You must want to change it.
Yeah.
You have a fine mind. With your fine mind and his good heart, you'll both do well. And that's the thing where I was like, this is a Feeny lesson I needed. This is a Feeny lesson that, in all honesty, I want to like put on my wall somewhere. This idea of it is not enough to succeed in this world. Because if you succeed in a capitalistic world, you just become a part of it. You have to want to change it.
Can I just say that this is one of my favorite Feeny scenes that we've had in a really long time. I love the way Jack is looking at Feeny as he talks, kind of really soaking in his wisdom. But we also just have Feeny teaching again. And I feel like the show, really, once they got to college, kind of underestimated how important the teaching and learning aspect of the show played in the enjoyment for the audience.
Correct.
Because when the boys, or when the whole cast was learning lessons that we could relate to, when it was happening consistently on the episode to episode basis, we're reading this book, this is how it affects with my personal life, this is the lesson I learned, we can walk away feeling like we got a message from Feeny or whomever. And I feel like that's really been missing in the last like season or so. So whenever we get those moments, it really just feels like the heart of the show is returning in a way that feels like a callback to the highlight seasons of the series.
I agree with you. And also, you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me that we don't have a lot of stories in movies or television that honors the wisdom that comes with age. Idea that Feeny doesn't have to pull from a book. He's been teaching long enough. He knows these boys long enough to know the lessons that they need to learn and will share it, as you said, in a indirect way, but a way that he know they will eventually get the lesson. Yeah. We need to honor the wisdom that comes from elders and their experiences. And I think that we've kind of lost that. In a way, we've lost that because the people who are in power and refuse to let go of power don't want to just be wise. They also want to be the ones making the shows, making the movies, be in the way of it all. Mm-hmm. And they don't want to pass on that knowledge to anyone. They want to like hoard it. But I think that if you have a show like Boy Meets World that promotes intergenerational lessons, that's what we connected with.
That's such a great point. I'm so sorry, but yes, I agree.
Oh, sorry. I was just gonna say that's what really made Boy Meets World unique. You got this grandfather lesson from someone who wasn't their grandfather. And as we've all grown up in our relationship, some of us don't meet our grandparents. But knowing that there are people out there who have lived this life before, who know what they're talking about, who are willing to step aside and let you learn and be the quote unquote center, the main character of the story, but we're here to also share and impart our wisdom. That is missing. That is needed. That's actually one of the foundations of the hero stories, the old wise man. The mentor, and we just don't have that as much anymore.
Well, I just think that in general, it's something I just thought of as you were making that point was the intergenerational storytelling element. How when we were in seasons 1 through 5, we had storylines going between Feeny and Alan and Amy and the kids and Mr. Turner. And just there were all of these like intergenerational storylines that made it really family Friday night television where any age group could jump in and feel represented. Ever since we've gone to college, it's been solely focused on the boys and the kids and this very specific college age group. Even Amy and Alan, who went through like a huge thing having a kid, was kind of a blip in that season. They weren't even really fleshed out, really. And so it just feels like it feels like a song that doesn't have enough bass or treble. You know what I mean? The balance is off.
And to your point, like it reminded me of, I don't remember, we were... For those of you who don't know, it's on our Patreon. We re-recorded Last Tango in Philly. But when we were talking about Last Tango in Philly, we looked at the fact that these boys were learning the lesson about women and about relationships through Eric, not through Alan or Feeny, the experienced, married elders. You know, like they are not the ones who are teaching these lessons. And I think that there is a space to say, hey, sometimes adults do know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes they have wisdom to impart. And I think that that's what we're missing. I feel like that was kind of like the special sauce. And it's what we haven't had a lot of lately.
One thing I just want to say about the storyline, and you can add whatever you'd like to it before we close out, but the man with the monkey comes back, yep. And he tells Eric, hey, I kept my word. Here is the monkey's girlfriend. Here's the money I owed you. And the monkey man looks at Eric and says, you're a good boy. Don't ever change, which is something that Feeny reiterates. And then Eric says, I'll try not to. The sprinkle, sprinkle, Michael Jacobs moment. It felt like, again, like there was heart.
Yes.
In this show that yeah. I haven't felt in the episodes prior to the season, which I think desperately needed more heart.
I agree. So
I think that's why this episode feels like a standout in the storyline, which still is kind of zany, still feels like it means more to me than some of the other ones we've had.
And I think it's interesting that comes best when Feeny is teaching a lesson. So are you ready for the B storyline?
Sure. Sure, okay. Let's jump in.
So, B storyline is, I like how we start. I will say that. I like how we start. You have Rachel, Angela, and Topanga are living in their apartment again, which is really Jack's apartment, but whatever.
Okay.
And they're like, it's so nice to have a girls' night. Let's watch a movie. Things that we don't get to do when the boys are around.
Rachel's like, I'm so happy because when the boys were living with me, I couldn't watch a movie without booty in the title. But now I get to watch Terms of Endearment or whatever. She just started listing off these kind of famous 90s quote-unquote chick flicks. And she was so excited to have a girls' night.
Enter Corey. And it's Corey specific because I made note that Corey directly said, Topanga says, I thought I told you we were having a girls' night. And Corey says, I heard that, but I thought you'll be there. Angela will be there. Sean and I should obviously be there. And we're going to interrupt this time that you've already notified me should be set aside. I'm going to tell y'all right now, and I've honestly been waiting to say this. This is the perfect time to say this. For a while, I felt bad because I've been looking at all of the sponsor or the responses and feed online. And there are a lot of people who are like, I feel like Corey is just being too hard on. I feel like it's the 90s. You guys should just let it be, blah, 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 blah. No, none of that. Because the point of critique is to point out what could be better. And if we're going to tell these stories again, a lot of storytelling is telling the same stories over and over again, but with a twist or updating them. And if we are going to tell these type of stories, if you're going to tell a story about roommates who have conflict or men who need to learn boundaries with their girlfriend's roommate, all of those things are good. I can't stand Corey doing this because Corey inserts himself in a way that is not lovable. Going to her and being like, I heard what you said and I chose to ignore it. Nah, not good. And the fact that this episode continuously, it's just like, well, look at him. He's so cute.
That's what I wanted to say. My issue isn't even with Corey in this episode. Corey is who he has been allowed to be
absolutely
the entire time. No one has checked this motherfucker. So of course he oversteps. He is a habitual line stepper, okay? And so he makes complete sense. The Angela and Topanga of it all, specifically the Topanga of it all, when you guys just got back together after you guys had all this nonsense, the fact that she is so, but isn't he so cute? For example, when he first starts in, he's like, they jump in. He kind of immediately dismisses the movies that Rachel is excited to watch. He's like, oh, Estrogen on Parade. Put the seat down. These shoes are these shoes. And he is so misogynist in a way that to me just doesn't even logically fit well with who we know Topanga to be and who she would allow her partner to be. Because if Corey said that to season 1, 2, even season 3 Topanga, Topanga would check him.
Well, not only that, but like, you're right. We're starting to venture over into Topanga just being classic TV wife.
Passive.
Yeah, passive, very much encouraging or allowing at the bare minimum his behavior. And it just seems like the character of Topanga has lost all fight of any kind. And or at least with Corey. Because she's going to fight and she's going to argue with Rachel, who's house this is, by the way.
Don't even get me started on that shit.
More than anything else that happens, Angela and Topanga go to Rachel and say, you should just let it be. I mean, this is our place. It's like, girl, you got here yesterday.
100%.
I don't even know if y'all paying rent. What is going on?
I love all of this. And can I just say, even though we're kind of like, kind of poking holes at how Corey and Topanga are acting in forms of the characters that have been established, there was, it maybe still is, but definitely during this time, a conversation about quote unquote chick flicks and the way that chick flicks were talked about in media, the way that they were talked about by men in media. There was something about this that felt overly tropey, but also very true of a time period that I myself experienced.
Yes.
And I feel like if you were to remove the Corey and Topanga of it all, in the sense that, like, oh, this is not who I know Topanga to be, and oh, I want Corey to be a better person. If you could forget that shit, I feel like this interruption into Girls' Night works. This is something I could see on Living Single. This is something I could see on Friends. This is something I can see on another show in a very sitcom-y way. I just wish that Topanga, again, would just have found moments to check Corey that weren't provoked by Rachel.
Correct. Specifically because even Angela, if we're going to be honest, because even Angela is allowing this kind of behavior from these boys. And what's funny is, you're right, if we remove like the relationship of it all, this feels very Friends. It feels very Joey and Chandler are in Monica and Rachel's. Actually, there is an entire episode of Monica having to deal with her brother being in the apartment again because he's now dating Rachel. And, you know, that whole thing of being like, ah, I had to deal with this growing up and now I have to deal with it as an adult. Again, that storyline works. I'm not against the boys being in their space. I'm against the way in which the boys dismiss the girls and are their behavior is co-signed by the girls.
The co-signing of the behavior is my biggest issue. Because, okay, so later on, Corey
Wait, really quickly, even before then, like, they hop on the couch and bump Rachel off her own couch. And then even from, and this is from like a friendship roommate perspective, you guys know that Rachel is single. You know that she's not with anyone. Does it feel like a good use of her time, or does it feel respectful of your plans for you to be coupled up with your boyfriends on the couch while your roommate, whose house this is, has to sit and watch you guys basically co-opt the living room?
They never comment on the fifth wheel of it all. They never comment on how it might make Rachel feel to see them coupled up. They never talk about how she was denied the girls' apartment that she ultimately dreamt of because the girls got together with the boys so quickly.
Correct.
She never got to have any of that. And all of that is overlooked because the habitual line stepping gets all the attention. We kind of lose focus on just the friendship element of it all, like you were saying.
Thank you. That's my point. My point is Topanga and Angela are being bad roommates in general. Mm-hmm. And you can have a you're being bad roommates conversation. And you can do so without using Rachel's body as the solution.
We're going to get to that.
So then the next time we see them is when we see them in the apartment. And they're eating all the girls' food, and they're critiquing all the girls' food, but keep going.
Yeah, and just one thing I want to say about that, which I thought was so interesting, is that when the boys are back there and they're just eating up all the food, Rachel comes down, she's in a towel, she was not expecting them to be there, and the boys are like, hey, we came in with our key, and she's like, wow, I really wish Topanga would have told me that, and the boys are like, oh shit, we didn't know she didn't tell you about the key. And that's what made me think this is a Topanga, Angela, Rachel thing.
Yes.
I'm going to ignore all the boys' bullshit because everything they're doing has been encouraged and allowed to this point that I'm just not even going to focus on that aspect of it. Because Topanga gave Corey a key and never talked to Rachel about it. And that is the issue that needs to be discussed more than anything else.
Corey and Sean say in the beginning they're eating all the food, and in a way, you can be like, oh, Corey and Sean going to their girlfriend's house, eating all of their food, not ideal, but allowed.
Well, the dialogue they even say at the time is that, like, isn't it great that our girlfriends never finish their meals? They always have leftovers. They're assuming they're eating Angela and Topanga's food in a way I can overlook. I can forgive.
Absolutely overlook that. But then, which again, and to your point, they are like, oh, she didn't tell you? This is awkward. And it's not played for laughs. They're not like, awkward. They're like, no. This is awkward. We didn't know that they didn't tell you about this. So sorry. They offer to leave. But two things happen. One, I can't remember which one of them. They go, what circumstances, what brought us to this free looky? And I was like, okay, not good. You're already ogling her. And this is your girlfriend's roommate. And then they bring up the fact that they have put it in her panty drawer. She's like, you went in my panty drawer? And they're like, calm down.
Yes.
We only read your diary. And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
You being in the kitchen eating her food, one thing. You going into her drawer to leave a note, another thing. Again, a step, I don't like it. I think that it's a violation. But you were, in fact, where could she see this? We'll put it in one of her drawers. Of course, we're boys. We're going to put it in the panty drawer. But then you're like, we read your diary while we were in it. It's like, all right, no. You have the excuse of we didn't know that we didn't have permission to be in the house. But you knew you should not have been in her bedroom. You knew you should not have been going through her underwear drawer. And you knew that you should not have been reading her diary. That is like what you wouldn't do to your sister.
Can we talk about what they left in her underwear drawer? A shopping list of snacks that she was lacking in her fridge for them. This is wild behavior. And the fact that they never really get down to the creepiness of the underwear thing is strange. Because even after Rachel confronts Angela and Topanga being like, hey, they've been eating my food. They've read my diary. They've gone through my underwear drawer. Like, the girls kind of dismiss it and then wait for Rachel to leave. And they're like, don't ever go through her underwear drawer ever again. And the thing that the boys are most upset with is they're like, oh man, never again. Like, that's the thing that they walked away with is like, oh shit, now we don't have access to go through Rachel's drawers. Like, that's what I mean in terms of the lack of accountability that that Angela and Topanga have given Sean and Corey, to the point where they are now responsible partly for how they are negatively affecting other people's lives, in the same way that we were saying that Amy and Alan are responsible for how, like, bad the boys are getting. Like, without making your friends accountable, you're like, over time, to their negative behavior, you are now a role player and encourager to it all. So
absolutely, to your point, like, let's remember, Rachel very rightfully says they went through my underwear drawer. They read my diary. And these are not children. These are not 3-year-olds. These are not 13-year-olds. These are grown-ass, in our world, grown-ass men who understand right from wrong. They have enough to keep calling her a bad girl. Mm-hmm. So they are sexualizing her in her own house. And
shaming her for her sexual exploits that they snuck and read, by the way.
Yeah, her own personal thoughts. They are using those against her. And then on top of it, when she expects the other women in her life who she share a space with to condemn them, they literally just look over and go, well, sorry. And both Angela and Topanga go, oh, I mean, how can you be mad at that? And it's like, because he's not a child. This is a grown man who went through my things. This is
Topanga
a grown
says,
man.
Aren't they cute when they're guilty? And I'm like, Topanga, to say that? Come on.
No, this is not. And I, because I'm very interested. This was written by Allison Gibson. So it was written by a woman. And I wonder how much of the writer's room influenced this storyline, because the idea of women sharing space, having their boundaries, the female characters needing to come together and resolve the issues, I love.
Yeah.
But, and if you want to, I imagine a world in which, again, she's like, our boyfriends are like family. We should all just be like family here. And I was like, in my mind, I thought they would do it. Knowing how sexualized Maitland Ward has been, I understand why they didn't, and I'm glad that they didn't. But I was like, she's wearing a towel in that moment. That's a perfect time to just be like, oh, okay. if we all family here, I'ma walk around in my house comfortably, 100%. Which should bother you guys. But instead, they delay it. But I was like, no, she's wearing the towel now. But, you know, again, long, long game, long-term plan. I'm really happy that Maitland didn't have to, like, even imply that she was nude. But at the exact same time.
You know what? You were saying at the beginning of this episode, you're like, oh, man, it sucks that we have to sexualize Maitland Ward's character again. And even though I agree with it, I have to say, out of all the bullshit reasons that they found to sexualize this character, at least this reason gives her agency. At least yes. This reason shows her being intelligent of like, oh, I'm going to play with this game. We get to learn a little bit more about Rachel by how she responds yes. to this issue. And she responds to it very similarly to how she responded to Eric in the laundry room yep. where she's like, oh, I'm gonna play this game, but then I'm doing it to ultimately teach you this almost Feeny like lesson. And as the elder woman of the group, I like this being a character trait for her, and I wish we got to see more of Rachel like this versus, you know, in some of the other positions that they've put her in. So yes, sexualized, but again in a way that I feel works in this episode.
I agree with you. I love it, and I didn't make that connection, but you're right in that this is how Rachel solves problems. Rachel's like, oh, okay. Yeah. You ain't got to worry about it. I'm just going to confront you with your own words mm-hmm. later on. And I feel like that's a great approach. It's very classic television. Yeah. It's also a great way to make a point. The only thing that I will say is it did dawn on me. I was talking about the sexualization of her. I feel like we could have done like a face mask on her, you know, something to make it where she's less presentable and more just at home definitely. Feeling comfortable, because in that way it's more of a point that she was comfortable, she was at home, she was having her own time, and these boys invaded that instead of just making it
sexy. What's interesting about that is that that's how they portrayed Topanga when she moved in with Corey in the dorm exactly. is that she got put down, but Rachel gets sex up. So it's just very interesting the way they show these two characters.
Absolutely. I agree with that. But then, of course, we have the resolution to this, which is that
Rachel is back at the apartment making out with the girls. And it's interesting because the boys are like, hey, is it cool that we're here? Rachel's in her room alone. Like, is this sure that we're cool that we're making out? And the girls are like, insist, it's all good, which I just thought was interesting.
Yeah. And then Rachel goes, it is all good. I'll be cleaning in my underwear if that's mm-hmm. okay with you.
And which isn't really sudden, even underwear. It's like ABC Family underwear.
It's ABC Family. Yeah. But it's implied. We understand what we're going for here. And it does not stop Corey or Sean from having a good old time.
The boys are basically drooling over Rachel. And instead of getting mad at the boys for sexualizing their roommate, they are upset with Rachel for how she's dressed. This is the kind of shit I'm talking about. This yeah, is the exactly. shit that season one Topanga would not have. She only brought men up for breathing. What does she care about this? Like, it's exactly. a completely different person.
But also to your point, the idea that both Angela, who we know to be very educated and aware, more aware than most people, and for Topanga, who we expect at this point in time to still have some sense of solidarity with her female friendships. The idea that it is only once Rachel presents her body and is seen as competition that the girls actually understand the importance of boundaries, I have a problem with.
100%.
Like, 100%. I feel, I understand why they did it. I understand why she had to take it there. In this, because of the characters that we have in this episode.
Well, but the boys turn into basically that wolf cartoon of the howling. Yeah. They're like literally push the girls off the couch to make room for Rachel. They're in a way that if you saw a couple acting in real life, if you saw a boyfriend doing this in front of his girlfriend, you would be like, something is wrong here. Yeah. You need to work on this relationship, not I need to yell at my female roommate for living in her own house.
But again, it's one of the things that it's the catalyst that brings the conversation and like allows sure. them to have the time. And to your point, all I kept thinking about is all the boys. Like, I think Sean even at one point in time goes, hey, are you or are you not going to continue cleaning? And yeah. you know, like, it's like this whole thing, and then they put them outside and they're looking through the peephole, and I was like, it becomes this thing where we are allowing small infidelities. You know, it's like it doesn't matter that Topanga, who uses it herself, it doesn't matter that Topanga is engaged to Corey and that he's her fiance. The idea that he's ogling her roommate is fine. Rachel's the one who needs to be understanding.
Topanga never says, hey, you're my fiance and this makes me feel uncomfortable. Please don't treat another woman that way. That never happens.
No, she doesn't say you're my fiance and I would like, why are you ogling someone we know, let alone another woman? Nope. All of this is okay. It is Rachel who needs to be understanding that her fiance is going to come into the house sometimes and look at you. Sexually. You
know
what?
Can I just say something? And I don't mean to skip ahead, but you know, in prep for this episode, we actually saw the next episode. And one thing that's current that I want our listeners to pay attention to as we talk next week is how Corey's built up sexual tension plays a role in him and Topanga's relationship, because it almost feels like Topanga at this point can sense that Corey is just so horny he can't concentrate and is giving him pass after pass after pass in a way that I feel like is kind of like it's not something that I want to encourage, and like it's not something that should be happening in the way that she is allowing this behavior to, this almost incel like behavior to manifest.
You're saying that Topanga threw Rachel's body at Corey so she would be able to keep her own virtue?
I'm saying that the reason why she forgave Corey and directed her anger towards Rachel is almost in like this, oh well, I can understand why he's so pent up in a way. Like it like I'm not saying that that's what happened, but that's how they interpreted it.
I know, but I'm saying that what you're essentially saying is Topanga is willing to sacrifice Rachel's body if it means that Topanga gets to keep her virtue.
I mean, the show is definitely saying that.
That's definitely what the show's argument is. Yeah. Okay.
Just one last thing I want to say is that when Rachel confronts the girls, she says, it's cool when they look at my underwear, just not when I'm wearing it, which again, I just thought was just a very powerful line. Yes. I felt it made Rachel seem very wise and smart. It shut the girls down immediately. They apologized profusely. And again, I wish we saw Rachel in this light more.
I wish we saw Rachel in this light more. And I also wish. I wish there were some kind of consequences for the boys. Just kind of going back to like the entitlement of it all. Corey, even in the A storyline, goes to Eric's place of work and goes, hey, 2 free hot chocolates. And Eric's like, no, you got to pay for those now. And Corey is just enraged. He's like, I'm telling mom, you won't give me free things? How dare you? And it's like, yeah, we have reached the point in time where this show no longer wants to teach Corey lessons. It just wants to enable Corey to be Corey and for everyone else to adjust.
This show happened at a time when the language of white privilege wasn't there for us to recognize it so clearly as we do in this episode.
White boy 101, bringing it back. Okay.
I don't really have anything else to say about this episode.
But, yeah, I feel like we covered it all. So to wrap this up, what is your Feeny lesson?
The one we talked about of Feeny, I think he even said that at one point we talked about it.
It's not enough to succeed, but because then you'll become a part of it. You must change the world. And with your fine mind and his good heart, you'll go far.
100%. I just feel like this idea that it's not all about capitalism, obviously. We need to have heart for people who are struggling and understanding. I wish that message had been a little bit stronger, but I appreciate it. And I think that's what we're supposed to walk away with.
I love it. Bruh moment.
I mean, there's so many. I'm going to just say, again, going through the underwear drawer, going through the diary, leaving a grocery list in her underwear drawer. The misogyny was turned up for comedic and tropey purposes in a way that is hard to like appreciate Sean and Corey going forward from this.
Exactly. Well, also to your point, it's funny because it undermines the scene right before that. You said that they quote say, we're so lucky that the girls never finish their food. However, if you're leaving a grocery list for Rachel, then you know that this is not your girlfriend's food.
100%.
So there's that. What grade are you giving this episode?
I'm going to give this episode a B minus. Like I said, okay. I felt like it was put together mostly well. If you honestly, you can leave the Jack Eric storyline as is, and I wouldn't change anything. I think a lot of my major changes would come from the girl dynamic of this group. And I just feel like some changes could have made it an A episode. But for season 7, bruh, B minus.
And I love how you're being so gracious in season 7. When you get a good season 7 episode, you're like, yes, you get a higher grade. I'm going to stick with mine, which is I feel like this is a C episode. I feel like it has a lot of really good pieces. I love the acting. I love the performances. It does feel like two very disconnected stories. And in each story, there is a problem. So to me,
you know what? This
is a C episode.
You're right. You know why I say you're right? Because we just watched a season 5 episode, which is on our Patreon. And going back and revisiting season 5, I realized that like sometimes when we're in the weeds, we're grading based off of the expectations of that season versus kind of seeing things with a clear eye. And I think Correct. That if I were to take all the episodes that we've watched so far of Boy Meets World, this would not be a B minus in the way that some of these Correct. Other episodes have been B minuses. So I think I'm going to take mine down to a C as well. But I feel like for season 7, C plus. We'll call it C plus.
Yeah. Cool. Here's the thing. I was like, here's the thing. For season 7, the fact that we're in the high C's feels good.
it's what we can hope for, the best we can hope for.
Okay, you guys. So, really quickly, before we move on to our homework, want to remind you guys to check out our Patreon. As we have been saying, we have lots of really cool things there. If you want to add free experience, if you want to listen to our last Tango in Philly episode, we also have extended episodes, including we will be talking over on our Patreon about our reactions to Pod Meets World's season opener, season 4, You Can Go Home Again. We will be having a conversation about that episode. So if you want to hear our thoughts, check that out. We also have merch. We have lots of things for you guys to join, follow all of your things, give us your feedback, and we will see you guys on the other side for homework. Okay, here is our homework. What do you have? What's your homework?
You know, I had a hard week. Last week.
Did you?
No, okay. Really, it was just like the first week back to work after the holidays. And, you know, it's always a struggle. And at the end of the week, you're just looking for just like a release. I just want some entertainment.
Okay.
And my solution to that was to go see the movie Iron Claw.
Okay.
In theaters starring Zac Efron and Jeremy Iron White. Is that his name?
Yeah. Jeremy Allen White.
Jeremy Allen White, forgive me.
Our new Calvin Klein poster boy.
Yes.
I told you he was hot ugly. He is living up to that dream.
100%. He's having a moment right now. I just went hoping to have like a fun night at the movies. I did not know I was going to be completely devastated and heartbroken by the most tragic movie I can remember seeing in quite some time.
I've seen it, and it's so funny that you say that because without getting too much into it, do you know that that was toned down? They actually had another son, and even more things happened, and you're like...
They had to cut out the tragedy because they were afraid people would think this is unbelievable, the repetitiveness of tragedy that happened in this family. I think that Zac Efron gives like an award-winning performance. I thought physically he stepped up to the plate. Him being like 5'7" and like really feeling like he owned a wrestling ring in that way. I thought that the dynamic between the brothers was great. I loved the father figure in the role that he plays. Even her name is Maura Tierney, who plays the actress who plays the mom in Liar Liar, another movie that features a claw, by the way.
Yeah.
I thought she was great. I just thought that everyone did a really good job. And it was just a movie that I did not expect to have such a hardcore emotional reaction to. I thought I was just going to see a fun wrestling movie, but it was just a little bit more in depth, but worth it to see potentially award-winning performances. So
I'll say this. First, I felt like the movie worked best as brothers, when mm-hmm. we were telling the stories of the brothers, and even the father-son's dynamic of it all, how I've been saying this, it's like, it's as if, I think his name is Dionysus, had several sons, and it's all which son could fly closest to the sun. That's kind of like the tale that I got from it.
Sure.
And they're all trying to fulfill their father's dream in different ways
To
and
their own detriment.
their own detriment and the cost of that I really liked. I really
Yeah.
liked that. I really like kind of like the reckoning of that. I really like the relationships with the brothers. Without spoiling too much, the line, "I was once a brother." Oh
Yeah.
my God. Like that is devastating. But that said, it did lack a spark for me. But I will say it's kind of interesting. What do you think about Zac Efron's new face?
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'll say this. It's a little distracting. I'll say this
Yes.
going into the movie. I do understand that he had like a
Yes.
jaw
He had like bad
surgery.
reconstructive sh
Yeah,
surgery.
because he had like a serious accident. So I don't want to mock him for that, but I will say that whatever is happening with his face, I think makes him a more believable wrestler. In
Yes.
terms of just like that's kind of how wrestlers look. They all kind of have hot dog skin and weird hair. And so like there was something about it that kind of made his performance It made him fit more in the movie in
Yeah.
a way that when I see him do interviews, I'm a little bit more taken back by it. So,
I wasn't trying to make fun of him. I was just saying that to me, this is the first kind of feature film he has done with his new face. And it is interesting because part of me is like just trying to like from the eyes up, it's the
yeah.
Zac Efron I know. From the nose down, it's a new person. And having to fit that juxtaposition into one person, into one performance is hard.
100%.
And I think that that hurts him a little bit. But I also see this as if this is the work that he is willing to do, I think that it's just about exposure, very much like we did with Michael Jackson, where after a
Yeah.
while, that's just who you are. That's just who we've known you to become. And I do see, no matter what, I see an award in his future.
I can I just say this? I wasn't really hip to the whole Zac Efron story, what happened with the surgery and anything like that. When I saw the trailers, I thought it was prosthetics to look more like the original person. And so I think because of that, I kind of viewed the movie as if it was prosthetics almost. I don't know. Again, it was just I did I wasn't I kind of used his face to add to the story versus it distracting from it in a way that worked for me. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say that to your point, the mom doesn't have a lot to do, but her performance, like her almost passivity
Yeah.
and I guess it's like complicitness.
Yeah.
That is also it really really good performances and all I think everyone in the cast is just stellar. But you guys watch it, let us know what you
Can I
think.
just say one other thing about this? I feel like wrestling actually makes for very good movies. I don't know if
Oh,
you
it
saw The
does. It
Wrestler. I
does.
don't know if you've seen
Yes, I
even like
did.
Man on the Moon, like
Yep.
weirdly had like
I've
wrestling
seen.
moments to it. And I feel like it just plays really well on a big screen. I think that there's a lot of the choreography of wrestling, like the way that this movie shoots it specifically on like a very grainy film, it just makes it seem like a ballet of sorts. It adds a lot of theater to it that I just think works really well in a movie setting. I'm down to see more wrestling-based biopics or things like that. Like, I would love to get into some of the other wrestlers that maybe people are more familiar with, some stories that are equally tragic within wrestling that I'm more aware of that kind of happened in the 90s and 2000s. Kurt Angle comes to mind, things like that. So there's just I'm hope that this opens the doorway for more wrestling-based storytelling because I think it works. I think it works.
I love it. Well, you know what it is? They're sports movies. And when they're done right, they're great sports movies.
Yeah.
And the thing about ever since I saw Glow, it really made me
Yes.
understand that wrestling is just soap operas for men. And when you understand that, when you understand that there's like a soap opera aspect to all of this, then it allows even the writers who are telling a true story to kind of echo those elements in their narrative.
There's a moment where he's being asked by his girlfriend, who later becomes his wife, Lily James, who plays her. She's like, isn't it all fake? Like, don't you know who's going to win? And the way he describes it as like, well, no, like me winning a match is like me getting a promotion, and me getting a title is like my boss is like, you know, giving me a raise. And I was just like, oh, that's such a fascinating way to think about it that I haven't really thought about it. And again, the nuts and bolts of it all, of putting on professional wrestling, is very interesting to me.
To that point, there's a scene in which Zac Efron gets thrown on the floor, and the idea that he didn't get up quick enough.
Yeah.
May have cost him is you're like, oh, really? Like, this dude very clearly is injured and he gets up, but they were like, we should have got off a little bit sooner. And you're like, wait, that's what we're judging? I didn't even know that that was like a criteria. So you're right. It does make it very.
And I will say that Iron Claw, great movie to start the new year with, because again, Zac Efron's body is insane in this movie. Jeremy Allen White looks great too, but Zac Efron, there's moments where they're just showing him just like, doing drills in the ring back and forth, and you're like, wow, this dude is just like a force of nature. So yeah, great inspo for the new year.
Speaking of good movies, this was one of our biggest recommendations before the new year. I believe we mentioned it in our homework episode, and I have to say, they were not lying. I saw Godzilla Minus One.
How was it?
That movie is fantastic. That movie is why you go to movies. That movie, Godzilla Minus One, they were not lying, where it's like some of the best. Like, I'm not gonna lie, it starts off a little slow, and I was watching it in the beginning, like first 20 minutes, being like, this is what everyone was raving about. But no, this movie, like, it does everything that you want a movie to do. It's spectacle, but it does Godzilla in a way that is almost stop motion-y in a sense, where you're like, oh, you're not worried about trying to give me the most realistic Godzilla that you can give me. You're worried about giving me the most realistic Godzilla movie that you could give me, the most Godzilla story that you could tell. And it's set in post-World War II, after the bomb, Japan, but like directly after. Like, there is destruction everywhere. And it's a really good story about community coming together after a tragedy, and how the government has used these people as pawns. And it is only in them coming together as a community and not relying on the government to solve their problems that they actually can succeed to overcome the ramifications of war.
You've sold me on this. I'm so excited for this movie. I don't even think it's playing in theaters anymore. I think I missed my window. I think I have to wait for it to come out.
It's in a theater in LA. I guarantee you.
I'm sure I can find it.
I guarantee you it's out there. But Godzilla Minus One is a fantastic movie. The performances are great. Also, this movie had a budget. It's listed as a budget of $15 million.
Wow. And
let me finish. The director said, I wish I had that much money. He was like, that number is false. That may be what they told y'all, but that is not how much
money they gave. That's like the budget with marketing. Yeah.
That's not how much they gave me. So when you watch this movie and you see how big the set pieces are, how great the VFX is, because, I mean, you have a giant lizard.
Sure.
There's VFX music, but there is practical effects. There are all of these things. There's costumes that are just beautiful to look at. Fantastic cinematography. And it's a good movie on less than $15 million. You look at everything else and you're like, what are we doing? What are you doing?
That's so interesting. And I'm so much more excited to see it knowing that now, especially when you look at everything that's going on with movies, like major blockbuster films that are coming out now, where it's like, hey, these overly inflated budgets, we're not making enough money to be able to afford to spend $300 million on every Disney movie or whatever. Like, these tentpole films have almost destroyed the movie going experience in so many ways, that to see like a low budget, high action film just feels like
such a blast from the past concept.
It's so good. I can't wait for you to watch it because I would love to talk to you about it.
Well, because when your budget's shit, you have to focus on the script. It's like Everything Everywhere at Once. It's like you have to do a lot with a little. And the way you can do that is with great writing. And that's why, like, I'm so excited to see this.
Great writing and great acting. Because I was talking to someone about this. And it's like when you don't have the special effects, you need someone who can get it right. Oh, I remember I was watching old movies with my friend Lordy, who has been a guest on the pod, and he and I were watching these old movies and being like, reminder, these were things that you had to do. You had one chance to get this right because it's on film, so you need someone who can convey the emotions that you want them to convey, who can hit their lines, who can hit their marks, who can hit, like, you know, get it in a shot, because we don't have all day. We don't have unlimited resources to do this. Sure. And this movie reminded me of that, where it's like the performances are so good. And that's because we don't have all day to continuously do this. We don't have a $150 million budget. We have a $15 million budget, if that. Sure. So.
And I feel like that probably has to play a part in the performances of the actors, where, you know, it's like, hey, you have this one chance to get it right, almost like theater. Whereas, you know, in like a Marvel film or something, it's like, hey, we're going to do 6 months of reshoots anyway for anything that doesn't work, or we'll just have AI change it. Like, it's like you really kind of capture that human emotion, I think, when there are stakes involved.
It's one of my favorite parts of the show BoJack, where they're filming this movie and BoJack is just like, everything about this movie is not working, and the director's like, we'll fix it in post, no matter what it is. He's like, we'll fix it in post. And I feel like that's definitely become Hollywood's approach, where now I honestly think that movies are starting to take a turn, and they are starting to be less special effects, less high budget, and we are starting to get good storytelling again, because people are like, we don't want to see everyone in front of a green screen.
People are asking for it, but also these studios are running out of the damn money. They can't keep giving everyone millions and millions of dollars. Like, learn how to make a movie for $30 million. We did it all the time in the 90s. I don't know what happened.
As a matter of fact, the other day, for the very first time, I was like, I can't remember what it was, but there was a specific movie where I was like, I feel like we could have had 20 more minutes. Like, you didn't quite hit the 2 hour mark, and I would have been willing to give you 20 more minutes if it meant that I would have gotten a little bit more of a fleshed out story. And I actually feel like that's a good problem to have.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, leaving a movie wanting more versus leaving a movie feeling like it was overly conflated, like, is an experience I haven't had in quite some time.
Right. Okay. So thank you guys for tuning into Brad Meets World. Don't forget to leave us a rating and a review. Tell us that we are your favorite podcast. And if that's not true, lie to us anyway and still give us 5 stars.
Yeah, keep it to your damn self. We don't want to hear your negativity.
Reach out to us, even if it's negatively, at Brum Meets World. You guys have been so great on our YouTubes. Thank you for helping increase that number. Continue to do so. I think this is a good time to kind of end it. And remember, as Feeny would say, to dream. Okay, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. All right. Remember to dream.
All right, you want to just do it as a unison?
Yeah.
Okay.
Dream. Try. Do good.
All right, later, bros.
Later, bros. This episode of Broad Meets World was produced by Siege and edited by Tony Curtis. Broad Meets World is a 2 Free Tokens media production.
Bye.
When this boy meets world.